Welcome to Metaphysical Romp with Reverend Paul Hasselbeck and co-host Reverends Bill Holton and Cher Holton. Discover practical applications to bring 21st century metaphysics to work in your life. Here's your host, Paul Hasselbeck.
Welcome to another edition of Metaphysical Romp 2. This is the Reverend Dr. Paul Hasselbeck, and we are the team. We are delighted to be with you around the virtual kitchen table. And of course, it's another beautiful day in my consciousness. What else could it be? Hi, Bill and Cher.
Hello. It is another beautiful day in my consciousness as well. This is Reverend Dr. Cher Holton, and I am delighted to be part of this kitchen table discussion.
And it's very definitely another beautiful, beautiful day in my consciousness as well. This is Reverend Doc Bill, and we are very, 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 did I say very, glad to be with you guys again in this podcast. And as you guys know, Cher and I are the co-founders of an online events-driven unity ministry, a hybrid unity ministry called the Unity Center for Universal, Y-O-U, because it's about you, universalprosperity.com.
And we have tons and tons of information that you could take advantage of. Just come to our website, which is ucfyp.com.
Yes, and I bet you don't even know everything that's on your website at this point.
That's probably true.
And I have my website, of course, paulhasselbeck.com, where you'll find my calendar and where you find the absolute word, where we always share one at the end of this program. We're continuing to romp with Eric Butterworth, using and finding our favorite quotes. And we're having such fun with this, and we hope you are too. And of course, we're going to riff on a few today. And MR2, Metaphysical Romp, is about spirituality, pseudo-spirituality, science, and pseudoscience. And you know, we should have had meta-spirituality on that list as well.
Definitely.
Okay, so Cher, you've been our curator of these quotes. I've brought on a few, but what have you found for us today?
Well, we decided, Bill and I, to look at our library to find all the Eric Butterworth books we had. And it turned out to be quite a stack because we tend to always fall on those couple of two that most people are familiar with.
Correct.
But we had a ton. And one of them that we had forgotten about was called The Concentric Perspective. C-O-N-C-E-N-T-R-I-C, Concentric Perspective.
We're also thinking about from Eric, it would be probably appropriate to also have a follow-up, a volume two to that, and it would be entitled The Eccentric Perspective.
No, that would be ours, The Eccentric
right.
Perspective. Now, what's cool is the subtitle of this book. The subtitle is What's in It From Me?
What's in it from me?
You know, instead of for me.
I never noticed that.
I didn't either until we were looking this morning at it a little more closely. And wow, that's a pretty powerful statement when you think about it.
That's a talk title.
It is. There you go. You're welcome.
Thank you, Eric, wherever you are traveling.
Definitely.
Okay, so what you got?
So I thought it would be interesting if this, I can't give you a page number because there's not one there. It's part of the introduction.
Okay.
But it's the second page of the introduction because he talks a little bit about what that concept means. And I thought it would be interesting for our listeners too. Mm-hmm. So just grabbing one little statement he has. Imagine, if you will, an ever widening series of circles emanating from you at the center. Okay, so everybody get that picture of circles coming out when you're at the center. Note that wherever you are or whatever you may be involved in, you can never get outside the circle of which you are the center.
And the originator.
And the, well, I like that. Mm-hmm. That's a good addition. Yeah. And the key to effectiveness or the solution to conflicts is to return to the center, which interestingly defines the word concentration. And the reason I love this is the Unity Affirmative Prayer Practice uses that word concentration, and I never liked it.
Yes.
But he says concentration is becoming the focus for the expression of something from within rather than on something out there.
Wow.
And with that definition, that changes the way that applies.
That is really good. And I've often described myself and others that we are like the sun in a solar system. And just as planets orbit around us at differing distances, so do people. We have people in close-in orbits, and we have people way out in Pluto. Where Pluto is, right? Yes.
Who aren't even planets, right?
Right. And when I began to realize that, I also noticed that if a person tried to get closer than the orbit I've assigned them, I would do something to keep them in their orbit. Nothing mean, nothing anything like that, but still, people have their assigned orbits.
That's really an interesting metaphor. Yeah, it sure is, because we would do it through our level of engagement with them.
Exactly.
You know, we don't call them as often, perhaps, and that would keep them further away.
Yep.
I love that. I never thought of that before.
There we go. Concentric relationships.
Absolutely. And the key there is to recognize what are the ideal relationships for you. And then if there are people and things you can't stay away from totally, maybe they're, you work with them or they're part of your family or whatever, yeah, but they're not healthy relationships. Yeah. So learning how to orbit them in a way.
Yeah. To manage that, their orbits.
Yeah. That keeps things flowing the way it should. I love that.
And then that connects to appropriate boundaries, doesn't it? Because we have them assigned in orbits according to boundaries. And it's a useful concept, I think.
It really is.
Now, what's interesting is in their awareness, they might have us in a different, closer orbit desire.
That happens. That definitely happens. Okay, so what quote do you have?
In addition to that, one final thing is, at the root of you, the ground of your being, you are capital B, being you.
Yes.
Is that too hard to hear on the radio? On the,
it might be. You know, it's worth reading again.
At the root of you, the ground of your being, you are being with a capital B, being with a little b, you. You are being you.
And that connects very well to our idea that we are both human and divine.
Yes.
And because you said that, I'm just thinking I would even edit that and say, at the root of you, the ground of your beingness, your beingness, capital B beingness, being you at the level you are, or at the level of your current beingness, something like that would be how I would edit it.
Yeah, so using that word beingness is really important. And that might be one of the first words I created for myself. I'm sure others had done it before me. Because when we hear the word being, when human beings hear the word being, they think of a being or the being. And this is a being without an article in front of it. And so that making it beingness makes it pop.
It does. It really does. I think it even, like you said, I think what you just said is brilliant in a way that in terms of context, when you say beingness, it implies that there's more to you than what you see.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Okay. Anything else?
So over on page 60, over on page 60, here's an interesting quote. At the still point within you, there is a veritable fountain of healing, prospering, protecting love energy, potentially ready and divinely willing, instantly and constantly to resolve, solve, and dissolve any human problem.
Wow, that's a keeper.
And there's more, but I just want to talk about that for a minute because it really reinforces the importance and value of the meditation practice. When we meditate, we come to that still point within us.
Yes.
And the practice allows you to build the process of being able to get there when you need it.
Yes. Now, there's one thing in there that kind of niggles at me, and it implies a kind of agency. Kind of agency that those things are willing. They're not willing and they're not willing. And well, anyway, let's leave it go. It's going to be too confusing, but
we can will them.
We will them.
Or we will it.
Them. There you go.
It. It is probably better than, yeah, I guess them.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because that is an important point when you think about mm-hmm. it.
Yeah. And again, it's the wording difference of, from when this was written, which was a bridge. And now what we're trying to do is raise it to that next level, 21st century.
Yeah. So a metaphor we could use based on his language is, he said it's a virtual fountain, didn't he? Or something like that.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so think of a water fountain. So a water fountain is always there. You can always drink from it, but you have to activate it. You mm-hmm. got to press the button.
Yeah.
And I just got the most cool visual addition to that, if you will. Think about at the amusement parks where they have all those fountains that are popping up in different places and people walk. And when you walk around it, like kids love to play there and they can step on something and it'll make water come up. But if you don't know that, then sometimes the water will come up and you don't know why. And I think that sometimes the practice helps you make it replicable.
Yes.
You know why it's happening, so you can be the one to create it instead of thinking it's this miracle that something happened and someone out there created the water I needed to heal this thing or to deal with it.
Exactly. That's another good analogy. Definitely. Yeah.
I love that. I love that whole thought about, you know, because it's working whether we understand it or not, it works. When we understand it, we get to work it much more effectively.
Exactly. Now that was well put. Well done.
Yeah. So he goes on to say, if you are surrounded by any kind of conflict, and this jumped right out at me because of the kind of world we're living in right at this particular moment. If you're surrounded by any kind of conflict, dissolve your concern in a love meditation. Then draw a circle around the whole scene. Thus, all parties, all sides will come into your sanctuary of consciousness. Here, you can overwhelm them all with love to heal all conflict and open the way to understanding communication.
Read that again.
I want to share it popped a poem or a song in my mind from Captain and Tennille days. Anybody, does that really date me, Captain and Tennille? But it was that song about he drew a circle to shut me out. Heretic, rebel, a thing to flout. But love and I had the wit to win. We drew a circle that brought him in. Those were the words to the song.
Beautiful, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I thought that song popped in my head when I saw that paragraph, because he says, I'll repeat it, and we might want to break it down. If you're surrounded by any kind of conflict, dissolve your concern in a love meditation. And now he describes a love meditation. He says, then draw a circle around the whole scene. So, you know, this is what you're doing in your consciousness is you just visualize the scene you're involved in and draw a circle around it. Then all parties, all sides will come into your sanctuary of consciousness.
Love that. You're
bringing people into your consciousness. Here you can overwhelm them all with love to heal all conflict. I'm not sure that's actually true, but for the purpose of his quote, and open the way to understanding communication.
Well, it will resolve the conflict in your own consciousness.
Bingo. Mm-hmm. And that's the key. Yes. Yes.
That is the key. Yeah. And there's another connection here too. And you know, I've been riffing on this, is that piece where he says, dissolve all concern.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the concern is there because you love yourself. And you're feeling some sort of conflict. So that can become, again, if you have any concern, that's a trigger or a reminder or an affirmation that love is present. So focus on the love.
Focusing on the love.
And you know what you're saying? Interesting that you say that, because the philosopher in me would ask, when you talk about a love meditation, does that also include what is called tough love?
Mm. Well, it would in my book.
Yeah.
In my book.
Because it might, part of your awareness might be what you were talking about earlier, keeping somebody out of your orbit, out of your close orbit.
Yes.
To protect yourself and.
Or even one of your past habits or tendencies. There's a tough self-love as well, when you think about it, something that you don't want to repeat, that you know that you've done many times before, but tell yourself you shouldn't have, or that you've outgrown. that you want to move beyond that. That's a form of self-tough love when you think about
it. Yeah, and you know what? That just helped me see something that I hadn't seen before. So thank you both. And that is, tough love is often about us doing something that the other person isn't going to like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
First of all, we're making it up that they're not going to like it, but it's likely that they're not going to like it. And it's tough love because we want to be liked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so we're putting at risk, in a sense, quotation marks, at risk, our being liked and our being loved for the sake of supporting the other person.
True. Wow.
Yeah, that has many, that tough love has many, many dimensions.
Yeah, it really does.
That is something to ponder, to sit with. That would be a great personal meditation time, is to just think about that phrase, tough love, and what it means.
It really is. And since we are around the virtual table, virtual kitchen table, I should say, I'm now listening to a book called Neurodharma. And it's a guy, he's a Buddhist, a scientist, and he's connecting the meditation and all of that and what it does to change the brain. Mm. And he says something really interesting in this book so far that I've listened to, is that, so he talks about mind and brain, but he doesn't talk about them being separate. And he said, we can use our mind to change our brain, which then changes our mind. That's brilliant.
Yeah, it is. Wow.
Right? So deciding to meditate and meditating regularly actually changes the structure of our brain. Then that gets reflected back into changing our mind, so we show up differently. It's really pretty phenomenal. And the science that's coming forth about how we can use our bodies. So this is really random. I'm moving from thought to thought that's somewhat connected. Remember years ago, people talked about, if you don't feel happy, just smile. They've now connected that to biochemistry. And you guys probably already knew that, right?
We had it in our Monday musings this week. Anybody that gets that, because one of the techniques is, if you're not feeling good, put a pencil in your mouth. And it actually creates the muscle structure of a smile.
And then that changes the biochemistry.
Right, right. Yes. Isn't that funny how we just connected?
Yeah. So it's just knowing that our bodies, including our brains and our consciousness, aren't separate, and they are influencing and impacting each other. Ooh, here's an analogy. It's almost like our consciousness and our body are like Siamese twins.
Oh, yeah, because they are
definitely twins. Yep. Wow. And you know what? I just looked at our timer. It is already time to pivot to the absolute word. And friends, I hope you all are having as much fun as we are. And we are looking at the absolute word, which is based on Sunday and messages appearing in Daily Word, a copyrighted Unity publication, has been used with permission. And this comes from July 11th, 2021. And the words are pray with others. And as I was rereading this morning, I wished I had changed it to praying with others and making it more active. And the affirmation is, I know the truth of each dear one I hold in prayer. And now we're back to the concentric circle thing, is that we know the truth about ourselves, then we can remember the truth about others. And then it goes on to say, it is an honor to hold others in prayer. I am grateful for the sacred trust as I see beyond appearances, knowing that they are temporary conditions. I focus on the unchangeable truth that each one for whom I pray is fully divine as they express their humanity from their divinity. As I pray with others, I envision divine peace as the resource for calming thoughts and strengthening faith. I assert divine life leading to the realization of total well-being. I claim the principles of love, wisdom, and order as the basis of harmonious relationships and adjusting every area of life. I claim zeal to complete everything that needs to be done. Then I am grateful for the truth I know and the opportunity to pray with others. I know the truth of each dear one I hold in prayer. And that capital T truth is each one I hold in prayer is fundamentally divine. Yes. And so it is. And thank you, everyone. Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Cher. Thank you to our listeners for tuning in again. I hope you got one nugget you can take with you and apply. And for now, this is the Reverend Dr. Paul Hasselbeck signing off.
And this is Reverend Dr. Cher Holton saying thank you so much. Thank you, Paul, for allowing us to be part of this wonderful podcast and to our listeners for making it possible.
And this is Reverend Doc Bill Holton, and the three of us invite you to continue to be affirmative prayer conditioned.